The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
All right, well, let's begin. I was told that the clock is a little fast, but not too much fast. And I want to, be respectful of everyone's time here. Welcome. I'm Matthew Pascasella with the Office of Career and Professional Development. And I'm pleased to be joined by an esteemed panel of alumni and non-alumni, who have graciously given of their time this evening to share with you their inside perspectives and some of the skinny on what it's not only what it's like to work in a small and or mid-sized law firm, because we have representative of both of those sizes here on the panel, but also insights into how they hire, what they're looking for, who makes for a successful candidate in their offices, at least in their perspective, in their experiences, how to approach them, the bigger picture, but the nuances also of how to execute an effective job search strategy when you are targeting the smaller and mid-sized law firms. And I'm pleased that it's also part of a bigger day. This whole day, the Office of Career and Professional Development devoted this entire day to the secrets and strategies of working in a small and mid-sized law firm, because it's not an insignificant employer by any stretch of the imagination. But I fear that sometimes in law schools, it gets treated somewhat in the shadows of the large law firm recruitment process. And it's only with the benefit of hindsight, once you've been out there practicing, et cetera, that you realize the very real differences between working in both environments, the pros and cons of doing so. And this is not at all to malign working in larger law firms or institutions. There's plenty of merit and satisfaction in doing that. But this is very much about celebrating the smaller and mid-sized legal employer and showing that it's not a second best by any means. And again, I think sometimes in the law student's eyes and perspective, I sense that there is that sense out there. So if this afternoon didn't disabuse you of that, hopefully this afternoon certainly will. If Donna's presentation didn't, hopefully tonight's panel will. But more than that, we also want to explore each of our alumni and non-alumni's trajectories into the law to the extent it sheds some light on what you're experiencing now, questions that you have on working in smaller and mid-sized law firms, how to get there, how to present yourself, et cetera. Okay? We certainly didn't come, and this will be followed by a networking reception afterwards outside. All of you hopefully will join us, as our panel will, and share with you further insights, talk with you more one-on-one to the extent possible. And again, this isn't an end-all. We do programs like this frequently, although this one is quite unique with the exclusive focus on the smaller mid-sized firms. But with Millard Bennett, our alumnus on the panel, to my far right, second from the end, as the head of the Gold Society, the Myers Society, excuse me, along with the Gold Group, the graduates of the last decade, has been very generous with his time, as have other alumni, in putting together networking receptions here at the law school. So you could expect some more of that to be forthcoming. Okay. Want to hear from the panel for sure, and we're going to be asking them questions, but we want this to be dynamic. Let's hear from you guys, too. What are your questions? So that's not just a bunch of talking heads up here. We want to be responsive and dynamic and get the show on the road. And to do that, I'm asking each of our panelists to briefly introduce themselves. I'll start with Lelia here and working our way down. Just in 3 to 4 minutes, firm's profile, practice specialty, and types of clients you represent, as well as a brief professional background, recognizing we're going to be getting deeper as we move forward.
Sure, absolutely. Can everyone hear me? Yeah, okay. My name is Lelia Banks, and I'm a second-year associate at the law firm of Carmelloni, based in Washington, D.C., but represent clients in all of Maryland and most of Virginia. We have our practice base is we do a lot of we represent a lot of businesses, mostly businesses doing commercial litigation, some insurance coverage issues, professional liability, employment, labor law. We have about six different practice areas that we focus in. Some we have private clients as well as clients through insurance companies that we get. I mainly focus on professional liability, and I do premises liability as well. Our firm is about 23 attorneys, and
How did you get there? Did you start with them right after law school?
I did not. I did a clerkship first, so I'm only about a year and a half further along than you all are right now. So it's pretty fresh in my mind, the whole process of, you know, searching for the jobs and going through that. I will say the way I got this job was through my clerkship. So that was an invaluable experience, which I guess we can touch on later. But for as far as what my firm does, it's with the size firm that I work with, which is again about 23 attorneys, I've been able to get a lot of substantive experience as well as have a lot of guidance from the other older partners and more experienced attorneys. So I find that to be a huge benefit.
Thank you, Carrie.
My name is Carrie DeForsetz. I graduated here in 2000 with a classmate and section mate who I started our firm with about 5 years ago after both of us had worked at small firms for three years. And about 3 years ago, another WCL alumnus, also our section and year, kind of like Bush's cabinet, we don't look very far, joined us. So the third, as our third partner, we also have three of counsel, and we focus on primarily litigation, business disputes, employment, as well as health care and property. And so, like I mentioned, 5 years ago we started our shop and defected together from the same firm because we learned quickly that maybe our personalities didn't lend themselves to being employed by someone who told us what to do. And we fortunately had a couple clients that came with us, so we hit the ground running. And
don't your clients tell you what to do all the time?
Yeah, but they also, it's kind of related to performance. So now, for firm management reasons, we started our own firm in January of 2003, and we're in downtown D.C., and I look forward to going to work every day, and I might not have been able to say that years ago. And it's not as fresh in my mind, the process of finding a job, but if you're thinking about hanging out your own shingle, I could maybe shed some light on that process.
Excellent. Anna, please.
My name is Anna Pohl. I am at Marion's Gallet. I'm about 6 years out of law school. I went to New England School of Law in Boston. I've been at my current firm for 4 years, and before that was at Now Legal Defense and Education Fund for about a year. Our firm does civil rights cases and consumer protection cases, primarily class actions, although we also take on some individual cases. So our practice is national, really, in scope. We have cases all over the country, mostly in federal court, but sometimes in state court as well. We take employment discrimination cases. We do some wage and hour cases. We also have a consumer protection side to the firm as well. I work on both sides, or I have worked on both sides. I started out doing more consumer protection cases and now do more civil rights cases. I thoroughly enjoy my work. We do a lot of interesting things. We recently settled last fall a large class action on behalf of female financial advisors at Morgan Stanley who alleged gender discrimination. We settled the case for $46 million and some substantial changes in the way the company compensates and mentors and provides opportunities for women brokers that we expect will increase women financial advisors' compensation an estimated $16 million. So we try really hard to do good work.
Do good and do well.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's a hard thing to follow. That is to say, you want to go out there and do public interest work or civil rights work, and say, but can you earn an affordable living that way? And the answer is certainly yes. Millard, please.
Okay. I'm Millard Bennett, and I'm the managing partner and founder of the firm of Stein, Sperling, Bennett, DeJong, and Driscoll in Rockville, Maryland. In 1977, I graduated and had a judicial law clerkship in the circuit court, and thereafter with two people. One is a WCL professor, Paul Stein, and my friend from life, Don Sperling, sort of stuck a shingle in the ground and started a firm with the three of us. And we've now recently grown to 42 attorneys in Montgomery County. So as far as knowing small firms, I know small firms. As far as I think we're now certainly at least mid-size, if not by Montgomery County standards, we're one of the three or four largest firms in Montgomery County. My practice area is business law, business controversy, business dispute, but it was wonderful, and I hear what you're doing, and it sounds very familiar to how we started out. And, you know, you start out doing absolutely everything, and then hopefully you get lucky and find your passion. I love what I do. I love and am passionate about the practice of law. I interview, we have recently in the last year, and I don't know how it happened, but have hired 10 new lawyers. So we've gone from 31 to 41 or 42, I don't even know, in a very dynamic point of our firm. So I do have some ideas with respect to what I look for. I do all the hiring, at least I'm involved in the second interviews or when offers are made, and I have some good ideas and tips as to what we look for when we're trying to hire in a small firm. And so that's what I do.
Thank you. And Bob, please.
Bob Kelly, can everybody, I guess you can hear me on this microphone. I'm on a somewhat different system here. Even I am not old enough to say that I founded Jackson & Campbell, which by a variety of names has been around since about the 1890s. It has been and remains today either a small or a mid-sized law firm, currently about 45 lawyers, 45 to 50. We've probably been about that size for the last, 10 years. We've been as high as 70 during the heyday of some particularly specialized litigations. I think when I started in 1988, coming out of the Department of Justice, there were 22 or 28 lawyers in the firm. And we'd be defined as mid-size in Montgomery County, if not larger than that. Our offices are in D.C., and hence we're considered small to mid-size. And we bear, I think, an unusual distinction in Washington in the sense that there are almost no firms our size left in existence, period. They just don't exist. They've either been swallowed by larger firms, they've merged with other firms their own size, or they've broken apart and fallen into their constituent practice groups and become smaller boutique shops. The reason that Jackson & Campbell, my personal theory anyway, manages to do that, is we have one huge practice group that would not be out of place in a very large firm that does all insurance coverage work for major insurance carriers. And grafted onto that are what one would think of as the more traditional general practice law firm practice groups. The litigation group, which I happen to be the chair of, we have a healthcare group, we have a trust and estates group, we have real property group, we have a business group, you know, that just about what you would expect in a more local law firm, but it's a local law firm that has a national practice, tail wagging the dog perhaps, but engrafted onto it. As I mentioned, I personally came out of government service, was at the Department of Justice for quite some time because I was determined to get trial experience, but I was in the asbestos unit, and it took about 8 years to get anything to trial in asbestos. So it was a long road, but I was there from law school, graduated the same year as you did, my friend, 1977, and got to the firm about 1988, so you see I did my time at Justice. And have been a partner of the firm since about 1992. And I have my little alumni tag here because I taught here for 7 years. I taught the legal methods program as long as I could until the birth of a son curtailed my evening activities.
As it will. Thank you all. I have plenty of themes that we can touch upon, and I want to, but I want to open up right now at this point. What are some questions? Any questions that you want to ask, and particularly of a specific panelist, or throw it to the panel? Don't be shy, folks. Okay, we've addressed all of your questions. Thanks for coming. Now we've got to loosen up. Let me ask. I'll throw it out to Carrie to begin with. What would you say is the essence of working in a small firm? Both pros and cons. Others can cogitate on that.
Well, when we started up, it was frustrating, scary, and first of all, there's the eat what you kill notion of being in a small firm. Not necessarily all structured, you know, compensation structures at all small firms reflect that, but by and large. You know, if you have a family to support or certain lifestyle to which you become accustomed, you know, you better have some reserves when you start out. Another distinction or difference between maybe a larger firm environment and a smaller one, for us when we started anyway, was we didn't have that gray-haired lawyer to bounce things off of. So we were sort of stabbing in the dark or retaining consulting counsel on occasion when we really didn't want to commit malpractice because it really would have been bad. Knock on wood, no one sued us yet. But those were the challenges at first. The more experienced person to consult with. Also, you know, it's perhaps the smaller environment is much more personality driven than it is organizationally or institutionally, because the personalities are generating the rules and the dynamic much more so than an age-old firm's administrative staff or departments or partners who are long gone. So you really have to be able to, in any work environment, but probably especially where you're running the show with a handful of others, you have to make a lot of adjustments and compromises, like a regular marriage.
Do you feel like you're married to the firm? It looks like you're about to speak up.
Step up
to the mic.
That's definitely true. I think I neglected to mention how many lawyers we had in my firm in my brief introduction. We have 8 lawyers, including the 2 named partners. So we're definitely a small firm. It's definitely personality driven. I think, you know, it's. And there are certainly pros and cons to that as well. The pros are where it's a very collegial environment. It's very easy to access the partners to. We do have a few slightly gray-haired partners and one-up counsel to bounce some ideas off as, you know, speaking as an associate. But it's very easy to access the partners. It's very quick to get involved as an associate in cases with a high level of responsibility. It's usually one or maybe 2 associates working with a partner in the case, and because there's 2 partners and they run the firm, they're very busy with firm running things and supervising a lot of cases, and so I do all the work. So it's a very good opportunity at a small firm to get a lot of responsibility early in your career. One of the things that we do at my firm, because we work on such large, complex cases, is we almost all the time co-counsel with other small firms. And so that provides a really excellent opportunity to not only learn from the people at your own firm, but to get out of your firm and be able to learn from other lawyers in the bar, other lawyers in your practice area, work with people. And that's a way that small firms can kind of increase the footprint that they have in terms of resources and ability and things like that.
And I want to continue with the personality driven questions, but I want to first entertain a question that we have from the audience here. Please.
Thank you. My name is Nick Bucetti. I'm 3L here at WCL. And I have a question about pigeonholing and the dangers of that. And I was wondering, it seems like many small firms have definitely maybe some experience or expertise with family law or some other specific practice of law. Is there a danger if we join a small practice with that focus? Are we going to be pigeonholed in that type of law indefinitely?
Great question. Who wants to pick it?
I have a response to that because I was thinking about that on the way over, and that is one of the main dynamics of the legal marketplace today, and you can't escape it. Specialization is the name of the game. Law is too complex to be a general practitioner anymore. If you're in a big firm with 2,000, 3,000 lawyers, or in a small firm, you know, you're still almost certainly going to be doing the same thing. The best advice I can give is to decide what it is you like and then try to tailor your career search and every step you take along your career path toward that particular goal. Rather than, I just don't think you have the luxury of going to a firm and just sort of circling around practice areas and hopefully finding what you like.
Did you want to add to that, Miller?
Yeah, I was going to say that the hardest thing to do in getting into a small firm, in my opinion, is getting in the door. Okay, law firms, if you look in the help wanteds and what have you, and, you know, I know I advertise all the time, and if I'm looking for someone in civil litigation, you know, we say we would love somebody at least three years experience in a law firm. And I think that part of the anxiety, you know, my children, when they graduated college, you know, come to a point and they go, what is it I want to do? Because I'm afraid if I do this, I'm going to be trapped in that. I don't want to do retail. I'll be in retail. I don't want to do. And I think the same thing hits you. My son graduated from WCL, and then it was sort of like going through that same process of, well, you know, if I choose a family law firm, well, you know what? If you're interested in litigation and you have an interest in family law and you can get in the door to a family law firm, it's great expertise and experience, and you get the taste. Don't fear being pigeonholed in that, and your whole career is going to be dominated. If you can get 2 to 3 years experience and you want to be a trial lawyer and a family law gets you in court, you know, I would suggest go with it. Don't be afraid of it. You may love it, but if you don't, it's not like now you're stuck and you got to be a family law. I think there's a few divisions. I think, first of all, at least from our firm, you either want to be in litigation or you want to be, at least on our side, business and tax. And it's a different personality, a different drive, and a different character. When people come into business section, in our section, you know, I think we originally want them to write LLCs and work with us, meet with clients, to design the deal and do that. But if they happen to have an interest and gravitate in an interest in employment law, when you're in the business department, there's some moving around that you can do when you sort of define your niche. But I do think that it's really important to be able to get into a door. And the other thing is, don't stay too long. Because a lot of people have gone in and they said, I want to be a litigator, I want to be a trial lawyer, so they've gone to work in the state's attorney's office. And now they've been in there 7 years. And, you know, learning criminal versus civil law and that transition is very difficult. So the experience that we're looking for, that somebody's not afraid, whether for our family law department or civil lit or injury law, whatever it is, that they're comfortable standing up in front of court, comfortable talking. But don't get trapped in it for too many years before you move on to an area, and so that you have the benefit of having tried a case, but not the burden of being pigeonholed because you're just so focused in it.
Yeah, some great advice here, and I will just piggyback on that, saying that I do the alumni counseling here, and quite often I speak with alumni a few years out who started in a particular trajectory, but that's not exactly where they want to be. However, as we see, there are lots of transferable skills that you can take in litigating a family law matter as you could a civil litigation matter, in working at the SEC's investment management division, and how that might relate to in-house compliance positions or other administrative law, regulatory law positions in other federal agencies. So everyone's right. Yes, the law, the economics of law can't afford sometimes these generalists, and they demand that you focus sooner rather than later, but it's not always an irrevocable decision such that you take a few steps into the water and you decide you want to move somewhere else, that you can't do that.
And that is true, but perhaps the best way to put it is that the person that knows earlier what they want to specialize in and what they want to do has a competitive advantage over those that don't.
Absolutely. Excellent. Thank you.
Actually, I have one more follow-up.
Follow-up question, if no one objects? Overruled.
I'm lining up behind you, so hurry.
This is more of a personal specific nature, but how do you look at experience with, say, the JAG Corps or this type of more generalist approach? Or is our time better spent in acquiring the same skills maybe at a smaller firm.
One of the best lawyers I ever knew came out of the JAG Corps. Absolutely fabulous litigator. That's terrific experience if you're litigating. Same thing if you're at the U.S. Attorney's Office. Some of the mainstream justice departments were in court all the time. Litigation is the exception to the rule, though. I agree with Mr. Bennett on that. It's definitely the one thing that is transferable across the spectrum of other legal disciplines.
I have a different approach to that, just out of experience from what we've done. And we have found that we really like people that have been in a courtroom. When we're looking for the experienced person that knows the civil rules, they know how to manage a civil case. You know, it depends on what the nature of the litigation we're looking to fill. But I think that we look more favorably on someone who's actually been in a law firm, that understands the jargon, knows civil rules, knows motions, procedures, and all of that, more valuable than actually maybe, which is a lot more, you know, the JAG may give you a lot more intense litigation experience, but I think that we found more interest in being able to get people with the civil background.
Thank you. I wanted to just get back for a second to earlier comments about small, mid-sized firms being very personality-driven, and if I can ask both sides of the spectrum, both physically and also generationally, because we have more the more seasoned attorneys over there, whose firms no doubt represent their character as, particularly, and with Lely over here, the youngest out of law school. Do you see? We'll start with you, and then we'll ask both of you gentlemen. Do you see any generational issues or conflicts? As they relate to working in the personality of the firm, do you see it being you're coming from a different generational standpoint that conflicts at all, or maybe adds value, I hope, to the organization?
No, I don't see any conflict at all, really. At least with the firm that I'm with, the culture is it's a very congenial, collaborative group. The partners really are there to lend their experience to the younger attorneys, to the associates. There's a lot of shadowing. I'd say maybe the biggest conflict would be technology. The older partners didn't go through law school and much of their practice with Westlaw and Lexis. And so the concept of just going to the computer and getting it is it's a little tough for them sometimes to kind of delve into that idea. But then at the same time, they're also there to teach you the value of the books. They absolutely stress that. So, you kind of give and take as far as the technology aspect. But, no, I don't really see, because being so new, I don't have a particular way that I practice. So I'm still learning from the partners. So I think, I think I'm taking a lot of what they've done through the years and kind of learning from them and making it my own, and so I don't really see a conflict at all.
That's great. And gentlemen, do you are there any generational issues?
I think that as you said, and I'm on the other side of that spectrum, I don't see it as much as I get really energized. I find that working with younger lawyers, and if you see their passion and enthusiasm, you like to take them to the client meetings, you like to exchange ideas, there's a lot to be learned. We have multi-generations now. It's interesting because we have our first group, which are the original founders, and then all of a sudden it seemed like there was another generation that was about, 10 or 15 years younger that came up and they're their partners, and now we're finding a new generation, your generation. And I was sitting there at a recent meeting and I looked around and I saw, because I'm very comfortable and familiar with the people who were in their low 30s, and we've been working with them for years, and I've seen these new hires, and I'm seeing like 24-year-olds, and I'm almost feeling for them. They're just looking around this room, even looking at the 30-year-olds, saying, I'm surrounded by old people. But it's really interesting that we're now experimenting. It's a new generation that's coming in for us. And I think it's wonderful to share the technology, the ideas, the creativity, their energy. And I also think that what they see, and I can tell you I see it more every day when I go into a client meeting. There is no substitute for experience. And what we can share, having seen it, done it, we're comfortable with it, we're confident. When I first came out for the first 3 years, understand, I come out, I'm a named partner in a law firm, I'm out of law school a year, judicial clerk, and it took 3 years not to be afraid of the phone ringing. Because people are asking you a question, they're saying, I delivered this, I got the equipment on that project, I'm going to go broke, if I don't get it back, they're not paying me, can I go take it? And it's like, no, you can't take it because the law said, but you're going to be out of business if you don't. Oh, what's the downside on this? And you're scared to death. Even being a judicial clerk, you had this pile that we'd get granted, this pile denied. We'll talk to the judge about the pile in the middle. And if you're wrong, well, there's motions for reconsideration. Okay? But when you're like you, when you were talking about when you start and it's a little anxious because you're filing stuff, you're taking positions, you're advising clients that are putting their interest in your hands. And without that experience, and you're smart, you can argue both sides of the equation until you drive yourself crazy. So I really think that what we love is the brightness, the new law, the ideas of the younger people, merge it with the experience and the desire to share and the desire to work together. And I think that generationally, outside that we're the bosses and they're the new associates, it works well for me.
That's right. I was just going to add, though, that there are still probably some prejudices in the generation, even older than ours. One is against lawyers that show their disloyalty by moving from one job to another every couple of years. Some senior partners in my firm just cannot come to grips with that. They just can't grasp it. They look at the starting salaries for large D.C. law firms that come out of the paper every year, and their hair flies off, as they would say. And, you know, some are so old and like, classic Virginia gentleman, they have sayings that you can't follow, like something fast is quick as a duck June bug. So, but seriously, there are a few things that, although it shouldn't stop you from doing what's right in the development of your career, you may need to be sensitive about in dealing with some of the particularly older partners.
But with a small firm, with a lot of older partners, comes opportunity, okay? Because you're seeing, wait a minute, this person here is, 62, 63. How long are they going to really want to do this? And I have an opportunity to come in and learn and inherit a practice and be able to do that. So that's the other side.
That's exactly right. And again, from the alumni counseling perspective, I hear different sides of that coin. But what I sort of deduce from it is that a favorable product of the intimacy of a smaller firm is such that you are working, as opposed to a larger firm or a larger organization where there's many layers between yourself and the senior management, you're not necessarily in with the clients from the beginning. You're not creating that level of trust and intimacy. And I think generational issues, I hear more exacerbated and frustrated at the larger institutional level where it really is the hierarchy and then the smaller folks working here is much more of a symbiotic blend, I would say, between the generations. Other questions? We had a couple of great questions earlier. Don't be shy. Step right up. You can even raise your hand from your table. Yes, please, in the back. You and then you, please. What's your name?
Jenny. My name is Jenny.
Hey, Jenny. Eat what you kill.
How we know we can do it, and how we can expect to.
Well, pretty much the killing what you eat happens as soon as you chew. So, the eat what you kill concept. It's just an intense reality. For someone who's accustomed to a paycheck with the proper deductions made, and whether or not you're sick or on vacation, whether or not you have successfully convinced entities and people to retain your services or not, whether or not you bring people out to lunch or otherwise market or do a good job, you're going to get paid. And contrast that with some months, couple, 3 years of big pops, as it were, maybe in a contingency case, or unpredictable income. And the income is based on your efficiency, the quality of your work. I mean, it's kind of like when I waited tables before law school. It's, you know, I saw a direct, clear, uninterrupted relationship between the service that I provided and the tip that I got. And so analogous to that is the quality of work, the reputation that you enjoy and that you build. It affects the your salary, and it affects your draw, and it at least at first, and presuming you become successful at some point, perhaps there's more predictability, or at least a baseline minimum that you can expect. But there are times when, based on the fact that you're scared of the phone ringing, but you're also scared of it not ringing, and so that's what I mean. It's just a period of time, or maybe even your entire practice, on some level with the spectrum reducing itself in its size. At all times, you literally are subject to the cases and the matters and the clients that you and whether the client pays you. That's always a big.
Now, were you also asking in that question, how do you demonstrate to an employer that you're hungry to go out there and get clients and work? That's part of your persona? Was that part of your question?
Well, if I've never had an opportunity in my career up until this point to be an entrepreneur, how do I try to tell a potential employer, oh, I'll be a great entrepreneur for you, just based on my own ideas?
It depends on what you're doing. If you are looking to open your own shop with your friends or hang out your own shingle as a solo practitioner, these are definitely things that you have to worry about. If you're a little farther along in your career and you're leaving an established position and you're going to open your own shop, these are definitely things. If you're applying for an associate position at a small firm that is hiring for an associate position, there's much less of an expectation that as a young attorney that the partners are going to expect you to come with a substantial book of business. I mean, it's not going to happen. The associate positions, even at small firms that have fewer than 20 or 40 attorneys, positions like at my firm, associate positions become available when there's enough work to maintain another person, and so there's a salary and you get a regular paycheck and you don't really have to worry. The partners might have to worry about sort of income and outgo, but and it might affect things like how large the salary would be and how big a bonus you might end up, or whether you get a bonus at the end of the year or not. These kinds of things will affect how successful the firm itself is, but for most small firms that are hiring young associates, it's going to be paying a salary that you're not going to have to worry about today. This week it's $500. Next week it's $3,500.
But perhaps it never hurts to show at least your entrepreneurial spirit. Not that I'm going to bring in a book of business, but that I'm innovative, results-oriented, and I'm driven. And those kinds of messages, I think, are always welcome to an employer, legal or otherwise, perhaps.
Yes.
In the back, please. You had a question.
Can I make one more? Can I just add to that? Sorry.
Yeah, please do. What
we look for, and I'm sure that the others here will agree, and it's just piggybacking on what you said, is someone who's hungry to work and who's smart and who can think on their feet and who's articulate and impressive in some concrete way, such that they're going to. There's personality considerations too, but I want selfishly to benefit from that person's sweat. So that person needs to demonstrate to me that they're just hungry to impress me, to impress my clients, and to work hard. I wouldn't even think for a second about the 20-something-year-old or fresh out of law school associate bringing me business. In fact, if I'm hiring them, I'm overwhelmed and, you know, could use a break from that's not true, of course. But I just think that that's not there may be situations, there may be firms that are atypical. Certainly they wouldn't look, you know, frown upon it, but it would be an unusual conversation to focus on rainmaking.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm a 3L.
What's your name?
Sorry, I'm Dale Shaw. This question is mainly directed to most of my experience, or all of my experience in the law school, is so I wanted to know how your experience is now able to best find compatible to your current position, and if most what your experiences were like prior to working.
For those who couldn't hear, the question related to the transit, someone with a public interest background and interest, how to transition that effectively into the private sector firm environment. Question of Anna.
Well, our firm does what we consider to be public interest related work, and so we definitely look for people with a public interest demonstration in their background. We look for people who have worked on pro bono projects. We look for people who've worked at nonprofit organizations. These are valuable experiences for us. We definitely also look at standard things like your grades and school you went to and those kinds of things, your ability to sort of do the work. But we really do appreciate a public interest focus in your background. And so that is going to stand out on a resume. In terms of my own transition from, you know, the nonprofit world to a law firm, I didn't find it that difficult. It's certainly there are differences, keeping track of, like, a focus on billable hours and those kinds of things. At Now Legal Defense, a lot of the projects that I was working on were grant funded, and so I had to keep track of my hours to allocate towards the grants, so that wasn't a huge change. The work that I do, the civil rights cases that I work on, is really kind of a continuation of the kinds of things that I've done before. I had always been involved and active in women's issues particularly, and had wanted to do civil rights work when I was in law school and before law school. So it's not an ideological shift, really, being at a law firm that is a business and does want to do good and do well. So I didn't find that to be a difficult transition. It's much more difficult to get in the door, as other panelists have mentioned, in smaller places. We tend to look for some experience even in our newest associates. We don't generally hire immediately out of law school. One of the ways to gain some experience and demonstrate an interest in public interest related work is to clerk for a small firm that does these kinds of things. We take law clerks, and so that's a good way to not only put some experience at a small firm doing this kind of work on your resume, but also make the contacts at places like this. I know lots of public interest related lawyers, not only at my firm, but also at other firms. We might not be hiring, but maybe the firm that we work with on one of our cases is. So it's a good way to get experience, demonstrate your commitment to public interest work, and make some contacts in the bar.
A lot of important nuggets that we want to address in that statement. Other questions from the audience there at this point? Sir? Your name?
My name is Jesse Sook, and I'm also a 3L. From the comments I'm hearing, it seems like entrance into a smaller firm as a graduating law student is sort of the exception. Is that true? And if so, what are some of the things to look for? I mean, obviously experience, but what are some of the things to look for the firm?
Yeah, I get 30 resumes a week when I'm not even looking. And I will advertise for a certain criteria, like, for example, we're looking for someone with, say, 3 to 5 years experience and working in a business law firm, or and I'll get maybe 2 resumes out of the 100 when we advertise, it even comes close. There's just the bulk in number. And I think the whole key is to get yourself in the door somehow and get a chance to prove that you're invaluable, get a chance to prove you can make a contribution in a smaller firm. Recently, it was sort of interesting because we were always looking for a period of time, you know, for very experienced people. And then we discovered, you know what, as I look, and one of the unique things about my firm is we have 15 partners, and every partner has come through our firm as an associate in the partnership. And it's sort of interesting as we look at it that each of the ones who've done that really were like minimal experienced or new hires. So recently we have hired a couple people, but being totally green, it's hard to distinguish you from another person who's totally green. Here's a resume, 3-6, you know, here's 3-2, but I did. It's sort of without seeing you or knowing you, with you don't have experience, it's sort of a problem of separating you. I do think that getting in the door is such a key, and I know that people come in and say, I want to come in. If you can even drop in if you have to. You know, sometimes one thing about small firms, you know, large firms I hear have like classes. They're looking for March people and they're looking for this. We hire when we need. And we have literally hired 2 people who have really come on, and one's now a partner and one's great, who happened to show up when we were sitting there with one of my partners sitting there whining that his files are disorganized, I don't know what I can do, I got nothing, I need help, the secretaries are gone. And all of a sudden somebody says there's a new law student showed up downstairs that's looking to know is there anything they can do within the firm. Well, let's go talk to this person. You want to clean up files? You want to do this? You want to do that? Yeah. Okay, well, we'll let you do that. And the next thing you know, she's one of the leaders of our civil litigation department. You know, getting in the door. And when you get in the door, because I just think one of the most important things, and I don't care whether or not it's in trying to develop clients or trying to get hired, the key is you need to convince the person when you're in there for an interview why they should hire you. Don't make them fish for it. Whatever your strengths or your dynamics or whatever, demonstrate it. Show that interest. Show that inquisitiveness. Ask good questions. Do some homework on the firm and on the practice area. And even though you haven't, if you notice you're applying for a business position and all you have is a few courses and whatever, go get some of these, like, they call them in Maryland, MCPELs. On shareholder buy-sell agreement. Read some of that. Show initiative that no one else does. So you can come in and say, well, I've never really done that. However, I am familiar with the differences between a redemption and a cross. That would knock me on the floor if somebody did that. So I think that when you have a chance and you can get in a door, no matter what it is, even if it's a neighbor that has a friend and can they come see you to just talk to you to learn interviewing techniques, get in there, and then the idea is, it's like when I interview for client retention, I get in there and I'm going to have to listen, I'm going to have to feel, take all that experience, but I have to leave there with why that client should hire me, because there's thousands of lawyers. So I think the key again is it's very hard sending blind resumes and somebody, because there's a stack like this, I'm not going to pull out of the stack when I'm not looking for someone. And, or even I am, no experience if I'm looking for experience because there's a need. I just hope that sort of answered that.
I want to ask Bob, and you as well, but just to add a number, each year the number of graduates that graduate from WCL at least that go on to small and mid-sized law firms right out of the bat is about the same number of those that go into large firms. About 25% are graduating class in WCL typically goes into a small firm. About 25% typically goes into a firm 100 plus. So there, a quarter of a graduating class typically goes into a small mid-sized law firm. There are certainly opportunities there. And you have different hiring dynamics in different firms. And that's why it's great to hear the panoply of experiences. And what's going to make you a compelling and credible candidate?
Let me also throw out something. I'll put on my other hat for a minute. In addition to being an alum and a panelist today, I'm the chairman of the John Sherman Meyer Society. And what that is, it's basically our alumni association. It's the division of annual giving. And I have been working for the last 3 years desperately and hard to improve our alumni. I was shocked myself with how little I was involved. One of my partners of 20-something years came by and said, hey, look, your picture's in this thing from WCL. You know, congratulations. I said, how did you get that? And he said, I graduated there. And right there I realized that, boy, we needed to do some more networking. And we have been very active both with the WCL. The Meyer Society is a society for givers. But there's a thing called GOLD, and GOLD stands for Graduate of Last
Decade.
And it's for younger people. And I want to tell you, I have hired two people who are WCL alums merely from the relationships that I've established by attending some of these alumni networking events, because you get to know them, there's kind of a bond that forms. So I would urge you, when you get out of here, and graduate and you're working somewhere or whatever, to look at this GOLD. And in fact, we're having a GOLD networking reception for those graduates tomorrow night. And I think like 80 people signed up, which is wonderful. But you get to meet other alums, and the other alums have needs, and you develop those it gets you in the door. So I would say take opportunities to network and mingle, to get to know people, and even ask. You may not be looking, but can I come in for an interview, or can you see something? Because the two people I did hire, I wasn't looking for. Mm-hmm. But when we were looking for a fill-in, boom, I thought of these two people. And
they were right there at the time, putting yourself at the right place at the right time. Layla, do you want to? And then I want to hear from, please, Bob.
Just on the idea of getting in the door, I know that during law school all of these networking things were available. But it was sometimes daunting with, you know, maybe five panelists who, in a room of, I don't know, 50 students, to go up and just coldly introduce yourself. And I mean, frankly, that's part of the business, and you're eventually going to have to learn it. But I remember being in law school thinking, I'm here, I'm not going to go introduce myself to them. What I found was an invaluable resource were adjunct professors.
Mm-hmm.
My interest was in employment law, and I took an employment law course from Diane Seltzer, who's a practitioner in the area, as all adjunct professors are. And, you know, after being in class for so long, this might be more applicable to, you know, 1Ls or 2Ls, but after being in the classroom with this professor for so long, they know your face, and it's so much easier to approach them, and they're just invaluable resources. They want to help you. They want to talk about their practice, and, you know, courses from judges, civil trial practice with Judge Algio and Judge Johnson. I don't know if any of you have taken it, but if you haven't, take it. That's how I got my clerkship. And, you know, from there, one of the judges that I clerked for submitted my resume to the firm I'm with now. So if this kind of atmosphere just doesn't work well for you, find classes that you're interested in, and, you know, not to say don't take classes from professors at all, but seek out, you know, find out what the word is on adjunct professors, and, you know, find good adjunct professors and take their courses and talk to them about their practice, and they will get you in touch with other people. And it's just, that's another great networking tool that's kind of outside of the box from the typical reception that can just be a little bit daunting.
And Bob Kelly was a good adjunct professor here, right?
Hey, I was. I didn't hire anybody. Actually, no, that's not true. I did.
There you go.
I did hire somebody. What I would offer, first of all, it sounds a little discouraging, I'm sure, because we really haven't addressed the fundamental question, and that is, how exactly do you get that first job?
About
all I really would offer is that, to a degree, you're better off, if you want to stay in practice in Washington, you may be a little bit better off here than other parts of the country, in the sense that every trade association, every nonprofit of any magnitude in the country has an office in Washington, D.C. The government hires in all sorts of specialties that may be useful later. If you want to, God forbid, become a tax lawyer, nothing personal if anyone here is, but, you know, maybe a different, better example. You have an engineering degree, you went to law school, you go work for the patent office, and you come out and you bore yourself to tears, perhaps, but make plenty of money, and have plenty, more importantly, plenty of job opportunities. There are a lot of ways to get your feet in some door. And then the challenge is to translate that into the other job that you really want as your dream job. And I think the emphasis has to be on networking. And don't stop at law school. Think about all your college friends in the area. I'm on the board of the Princeton Club of Washington. And the amount of networking that goes on there, believe me, is almost inconceivable. And in fact, one of the reasons that I ended up at Jackson and Campbell was the gentleman we were just discussing, Art Elgin, went to Princeton. We were introduced by a fellow alum, and he happened to mention that they were looking. Remember that if a firm is looking, they've already gone through an economic analysis. It tells them that they need somebody and they think they can make a profit off someone, because that's the only way firms exist. You know, they have to pay the rent, they have to pay the salaries, they have to pay for all their Lexus contracts, they have to do all that stuff. So firms that are looking obviously have already made that analysis. Firms that aren't are a bigger challenge, and there the one thing I'd offer before I turn it back to Matthew is the personal contact is absolutely essential. You can't expect someone to pull the resume out of the stack and all of a sudden it's you. You have to press a little bit. And even if I think, I really don't have time to meet this person, but you know, they've made the effort to come see me, or they've identified me or one of my partners or somebody else as someone that they've done a little bit of research on and think they could learn from. It's kind of flattering. And maybe that turns into a meeting or a lunch or something. And if it's nothing other than guidance, that's the least that most lawyers are willing to give to you. They will say, well, have you tried so-and-so? Have you thought about this? I'm sorry, we can't, we're not hiring right now, we can't do it, but and all of a sudden you're starting to build your network, and that's the only way, really, to find your way through the jungle out there.
And if you you sit down, one of the OCPD counselors, put together your own personal networking campaign. I mean, that's what it's about, one-on-one. You're getting a great big-picture analysis here. But at the micro level, as it pertains to you, your dynamics might be different. As Layla said, maybe you're not comfortable in a big environment like this. Maybe you are. There are lots of ways to go about doing this. So don't be shy. Let's sit down. Let's talk about your career trajectory. There was another question on this side of the room, I think.
I wanted to say something about networking also, okay, if I may, unless I'm cutting someone off. Are we out of?
No. Go, please, okay.
So networking is this. If you're going to walk away with no other word, it's the word you walk away with. But it's also this amorphous blob of a thing that is both personal and professional. It's inconvenient on occasion. It's enjoyable and sometimes torturous. And try to avoid the torturous networking. But, what is it? Like, how do you do it? And sometimes it will work. Sometimes you'll be pushy with respect to a partner at a firm where you want to work, and they'll reject you, or they won't like you, or they won't be willing to meet with you. Sometimes the guilt feeling or the loyalty toward your alma mater might, I'm a WCL alum, can I come? Well, what am I going to do? Say, no, you can't come and sit with me. I'm busy. I'll set 10 minutes aside. But the paper that we get in, being how small we are, is pretty surprising in terms of resumes. And I just write a note to our legal assistant that says, I just use an abbreviation now, an acronym, TBNT, which is thanks but no thanks, which triggers her to write a letter. I haven't even looked at any, much of the resume. But if someone, as a student, comes to, I'm on the board of Federal Bar Association, D.C. chapter, we have a bunch of money and a bunch of programs, and we need people to help with the programs. There are hundreds, maybe, or at least dozens of other voluntary bar associations. It's good to be involved in law student extracurricular activities, but in addition to that, get involved with, especially for the practice area you're interested in, a lawyer bar association or other volunteer professional activity as a law student. And because I often find that you're doing a colleague a favor by sending them the name or resume of someone who you filtered in some respect. And the only way in which you can really filter it is if you've worked with someone, you understand the kind of person they are, you understand the kind of worker bee that they are, And the way in which to gain that access is, you know, one, you know, use your WCL card with respect to alumni networking interviews. But, you know, show up at, I don't know if they're probably not invited to this gold event, but you know, and you didn't hear from me, but show up to those types of events where you could get away with it. And you'd be surprised how many alums and lawyers throughout the city are, it's just, you know, the right place at the right time. You might go to 50 different events, and this networking thing, you might get frustrated that our advice was for naught, but that 51st could be your career for the rest, you know, your firm for the rest of your career.
And on the Bar Association trick, I mean, I can't
strategy.
Do a networking strategy. I can't do a networking event if my life depended on it. I can't walk up to a stranger and say, hi. I don't even know how to finish that sentence. And as a matter of fact, I'm a little terrified by the prospect of a bunch of people coming up to me at the end of this and saying, hi, I don't really know what. But a bar, if you really want to do, you know, you really want to represent puppies in Afghanistan who are being abused by, you know, whoever, find the committee in the Bar Association that works on that issue. Go to the committee meetings, volunteer to write an article in the committee newsletter. You know, you don't even have to, that way you don't have to go to a networking event and talk to somebody. You just have to show up at a meeting where somebody says, we need to do this. Any volunteers? And then you say, I'll do it. You know, there's a Bar Association committee for every blessed thing under the sun, and you can find the things that you really want to do. And you're not going to be able to, you know, you might have a different job. You might, your first job might be Starbucks barista. But if you're, while you're the Starbucks barista, you're also doing these kinds of things, you will eventually find a person who either needs to hire somebody and will hire you, or knows somebody who needs to hire someone who will hire you, or knows somebody else who needs to hire someone who will hire you. So these are ways that you can get involved in networking that are slightly less intimidating than a cocktail reception.
For those very quickly that are not as intimidated to walk in and and put it out there, two other ideas. One is, if you're interested in litigation, go to the courts and see if you can talk to a judge about being an intern. And you could intern a day a week or 2 days, whatever your schedule allows, because, first of all, you're going to see a lot of lawyers. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, you can talk to the lawyers while the jury's out or during breaks, but it does give you a chance as a judicial intern to meet lawyers and start getting yourself, again, get into the pond. Another idea, and I think this is particularly important for smaller firms, sometimes the work flows like this. Okay? Sometimes you're sitting there, and by the way, the second it starts to decline, you panic and die because you got to be, you know. But sometimes also getting hired is like, at least if we hire somebody as an attorney, it's a commitment. And the person's making a commitment. And sometimes I don't know enough about you that I want to make a commitment, so maybe you could try something a little different. And that is, go physically into some offices, because it's all about local timing, and saying, do you need any contract attorneys? Right now, I'm looking to do such and such and so, but right now, I have some time, and I'd like to know if you need a contract attorney, and you pay me X dollars an hour. Oh, no commitments, like dating. So you're less intimidated about bringing somebody in, because I got this case, and I got these files, and I got these issues, and I don't know what's going to hold up. After this, there may not be any more work, so I'm afraid to, quote, hire you, but right now, I sure could use some help. So I really think that's a great idea to go around and just say, you know, I'll do anything you need, help organize files, do researches, memorandums. If it works out, great. If not, goodbye for both of us, because I'm looking. And I've really hired two people that way.
Being entrepreneurial, again, yeah. Expressing those. Now, Bob, you brought in the Legal Times. Did you want to share something?
Nice feed, thank you.
A strategy from that? You gave me the wink. No.
I think that what we've been hearing has been that you need to do a lot of research as part of your career search. And to the extent that you're, are many of you looking for jobs in the Washington, D.C. area? And if so, how many of you are familiar with the Legal Times? Seen this in the library and so forth? It's got Post-its all over it, which I asked for when I got here, but it's got all sorts of sections, not just the job employment section where they're asking for the people with 3 to 5 years experience instead of graduates from law school. But look at the the section on who's moving where. Look at the section on who's being promoted. Now, obviously, you're not in a position to be promoted if you don't have a job yet, but it gives you a sense of why people are being promoted and what firms are looking for. Do your research. Do your homework. Look and become familiar with the reputations of various lawyers and judges. And judges have very, very wildly extreme reputations within the bar. Now, it's kind of hard to figure that out. There are some websites you can get to which rank judges, but you can gather, form your own opinions by looking at theirs, you know, by looking at the advance sheets, by looking at the little snippets of information that they have in here, the case digests and so forth. Who are the major lawyers in Washington? Who are the, you know, what are the ones that are looking, that are working in small to mid-sized firms that you might be interested in? Just to think aloud here. What about a letter, gee, Mr. McConnell, to use one of my partner's names, I just noticed you in the case digest in the Legal Times of the case was decided that you were involved in representing so-and-so, and I was very impressed, and the career that you've developed for yourself is one that I'm personally very interested in. Is there a chance you could meet with me and give me some advice on how to pursue that career? And then maybe Nick McConnell likes you and says, well, you know, geez, you could come down and spend a few hours a week here and we'll see how it goes and take it one step at a time. But it's all about getting that proverbial camel's nose under the tent and then just try to wiggle the rest of your body under.
Well, call it trends analysis. Huh? I mean, that's what you're looking at here. There are lots of, if you're going to be serious, if you're serious about being a lawyer in Washington, D.C., and you're not reading the trends as articulated by the Legal Times at least, you're not going to be in sync with the hiring cycles, the demands, who's on the move, because one person leaves one place, well, it creates opportunity somewhere else. You need to tap into that as much as just attacking job postings and doing networking for the sake of networking. There's lots of different ways to approach this artfully, strategically, volunteer, going to a law firm saying, hey, I'm willing to work on an hourly basis to work with your overflow needs, et cetera, a little bit of a honeymoon kind of thing to see what's going on here. It's being flexible, being entrepreneurial, putting yourself out there, and, of course, not easy to say, not fearing rejection, but rejection is part of it, and you just build that into the cycle and recognize that you need to try a lot of these different strategies, build a portfolio of these strategies, because you never know which one's going to absolutely hit for you, but you modify and you readjust that portfolio as you're getting more or less response to it. And again, it's something that our office could interface with you. Willing alumni out there can interact and interface with you in terms of your competitiveness in a particular practice area, how to get in, how to break in, what kind of articles would be interesting to you, Mr. Dvorsitz, given that you do this kind of law and I eventually want to get there. Can I interview you for that article? You know, flattery will get you everywhere. You know, it'll get you the front door. And also, it'll help you build credibility with that individual. But if you're just looking for the immediate kill, that is a job with Mr. Divorce that's there, and then you're shortchanging the process because he doesn't have a job for you necessarily today. But if he's impressed with you, if she's impressed with you, whomever, that might open up a Rolodex. That might lead to, sure, you know what, it sounds like you're on track. Why don't you, or have you thought about contacting so-and-so? And these things build on their own dynamics. We want to wrap up in the next couple of minutes and take this outside so we can have some more intimate interaction and maybe a glass of wine and then some. Other questions from the audience? Last chance to ask a question, at least in public. Of course, you could ask them in private. Let me throw this out there. Just quick polling. Grades, how important are they? Very important or moderately important, or you don't even look at them? Let's go down the line.
Well, having not hired anyone, but right, knowing my grades, I would say moderately.
Moderately. Carrie.
Moderately.
Less important the more credentialed high-ranked school you go to. More important the lower-ranked school you go to.
Moderate.
I would say at most moderate, in the sense that, again, we mostly look for people with 2, 3, 4, 5 years experience, in which case the writing sample, where they came from, what they're specialized in, how they present in an interview, they're the really most important things. Grades you have to get over a certain threshold, and after that, unless it's just stellar, in which case it's a big plus for you anyway, you don't worry about it.
Grades are important, but they're not as determinative and fatal as they are in the mega firm scene. Another thing I want to throw out there, we'll try to entertain those last two questions, because you talked about writing. Again, running down the line, how do I demonstrate I have superior analytical and writing skills? How do I do that, and how important are they, and how do I demonstrate that to you in a moment?
Well, critical. It's writing something really good for a partner that is willing to, well, it's the analog, if you're still in law school, to the associate who writes something really good for the partner who is so astonished by it that he circulates it to all his partners by email, which just happened in my firm a few weeks ago. It was just something that the partner sent around and saying, this is a model of how things should be done. It's obviously, if you're not already in the firm, it's a little bit different, but the writing sample needs to be carefully selected after doing your research, doing your homework. What kind of firm am I applying to? What kind of firm am I looking at? What kind of subject matter would most impress them? And don't just take, you know, maybe you even write something special for the purpose, but it needs to be carefully tailored, carefully selected, if you've got more than one, to appeal to that firm and be something that they would look at and say, yes, this person understands the subject matter, dealt with it in a very logical and concise but persuasive way, and I couldn't think of anything to improve on it. What a partner wants to get, and what a hiring partner wants to see as a writing sample, is something that I can put my name to without any changes. I want you to think it's ready to go in an envelope and go in the mail and to give it to me, not a draft, not something that I'm going to spend the next 3 hours rewriting for you. That's what you're looking for in a writing sample, too.
Miller, do you
agree? I agree, and I think it, the more appropriate to the area which a person would find interest in, if you're interviewing and if it's a business type of matter or if it's civil litigation, make it a pleading for civil litigation. If you happen to have some sort of writing within the substance, because I'm more interested in something in my subject matter than something that happened with the tobacco case that was filed somewhere else. However, go with your best product, because we want to see, was the analysis there, are there typos? And you would be shocked how many people have typos in their writing sample and typos in their cover letter. And as soon as that's there, oh, gone, forget it.
Yeah, absolutely. We won't even look at your writing sample until we've got through your cover letter, so don't neglect your cover letter as its own writing sample. Writing samples, absolutely critical. Good writing skills are paramount. And if you've got an A on the paper that you're using as a writing sample, you better reread it before you send it in, because your professor might not have noticed the typos that are in.
Is the cover letter are the cover letter and resumes writing samples to you when you get them? Do you treat them that way? Carrie, I'm asking you, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I look at the first couple of sentences, and certainly resume. I mean, I have this written. I'm much too anal retentive when it comes to grammar and spelling and punctuation for my own good. So if I see, you know, Washington, D.C. at the top of the resume without periods between the D and the C, and then later with periods, that is just one piece of paper. Okay, have 18 of your friends look it over, then go to the career office. Then, you know, pay a librarian to read it and a grammarian to read it.
Boring.
And with respect to the cover letter, try to, and I don't really have a solution or a suggested sentence, but try to start it with something other than a recent graduate of the Washington College of Law. I found your firm, is to be really neat, you know, or some adjective of neat. Try to, make yourself stand out. Doesn't necessarily mean different color ink or stickers on it, on the resume, but something, the blind resume cover letter transmission is going to fail 99 of 100 times anyway. So if you're going to do that or couple it with the temps at networking, then make sure they're perfect, and at least with respect to the cover letter, have the first sentence, which might be the only sentence read, stick out in some fashion.
And the best first sentence is, thank you for taking the time to speak with me the other day, and per your suggestion, I'm submitting my resume for your consideration, or something along those lines.
Making that connection. Closing comments on that?
Yeah, writing's important.
Writing's There were two questions that popped up at the very end. They still remain. Yes.
Good evening. I'm a one now. My name is Nefertiti Davis. And my question is geared toward those that hire younger attorneys. How do you feel about clinical experience and externships? I mean, that is experience to us. That's about as much experience you get during law school. But do you equate that to maybe like a year or something like that? I mean, is that considered within the, you know, the time span that you're looking for, maybe 1 to 3 years or 3 to 5 years or whatever?
For my part, it's not that formulistic, and it counts if it is related to the position being applied for. In other words, if you were working in as an extern or working voluntarily for an organization that helped the elderly fill out their taxes or something like that, wouldn't help you much if the firm doesn't have a tax practice, to make an obvious example. So it depends on how related it is to what the firm is looking for.
That's a good question. That's a legitimate question. And I want to wrap it up with that. But Melinda Van Loo just arrived, and I want to say hello.
Hello.
She'll be happy to also to speak with you outside as we move our networking session to that point. I want to personally thank each of you very much for taking the time again and for sharing these insights. Round of applause. And really, applaud all of you for coming out and for understanding the importance of having these interactions. It's always insightful. You always learn something new. And try to connect. And if it's not here, you know, it's with our office, and we'll talk to you about how to make connections outside. Okay? Let's meet upstairs and have a drink and get a little more intimate. Thank you.